Good evening, everyone, and welcome to RCN Sports Talk presented by The Morning Call. I'm Chris Michael. Keith Groller is on assignment tonight, but we have a jam-packed show, lots of football talk on tonight's program, and we're very capable hands here for tonight's show. Let's welcome in tonight's guests. We have Rock Hoffman and Al Thompson from Football Stories, the magazine, the radio show, the newspaper media group. Al, of course, you're the editor, along with Brian Baldinger. And guys, you do great work. Thanks so much for coming in and talking football with us.
It's a blast. Thank you very much
for having us.
I got to ask you about the Eagles, your prime team. And I thought the Eagles did very well. They hung in there against the Chiefs. Our panelists on the show last week were very negative. They thought the Eagles had no shot to win. So I thought the Eagles held up and did very well against the Chiefs, even though they were heavy underdogs. There are a few questions, though, I got to ask you. Some X's and O's and some in the postgame spin. The first question, though, has to be LeGarrette Blount. All training camp, all preseason, he's your number one guy. He didn't get a whole lot of reps, but that's because they want to keep him healthy and keep him fresh, and they know that he's a stable running back. And then no carries the entire game against the Chiefs. First of all, let's start there. You know, why didn't he get the carry? I know Doug Peterson gave an explanation. Blount wasn't happy the day after, but things, I guess, have been smoothed over. What happened at that game where your number one running back does not carry the ball at all?
Well, I think a conspiracy theorist would say that this was a pushback by Doug Peterson, that they gave him a running back that's not part of his offense, that's not suited for a West Coast offense. Mm. He's not a pass-catching running back. He's kind of between the tackles guy, but probably not. Yeah. The it just worked out that way. He did have a carry, but it was called back, I believe, because of a penalty, so it didn't go in the books as a carry. But after that, they hardly – both teams, you had Andy Reid and you had his clone, and they had almost identical stats from running.
Yeah.
The Chiefs ran the ball 19 times. The Eagles ran it 17 times. That's it.
Good point.
Four of those runs on each team were by the quarterback on broken plays. So both teams really didn't intend to run the ball to begin with at all. And it just... he admitted after the game that, I'm still new at calling plays. Perhaps, I should have gone to him more, but he didn't. And I don't think that's the reason why they lost the game. Mm-hmm. It may have helped them, but I don't think the reason why they lost the game. They lost the game because they committed two ghastly turnovers in the game. They missed a 30-yard field goal. You remember the week before against Washington when Caleb Sturgis hits the 50-yarder at the buzzer at halftime to put the Eagles back up by two. Mm-hmm. I thought from a psychological, uplifting standpoint, that was huge. So what happens? They complete a 54-yard bizarre pass to Zach Ertz and sets up a 30-yard field goal at the buzzer that'll tie the game at six. Mm-hmm. And what happens? Jake Elliott comes in here it was a draft pick. He wasn't some free agent they found on a playground. He was a draft pick by the Cincinnati Bengals, comes in and misses a 30-yard field goal that high school kids should be able to make. The kid from Parkland probably makes that every game. But he misses that, and that's deflating. Yeah. So they go into at halftime 6-3, and he takes after his head coach. He gets behind at all. He's just going to start firing away, and that's what he did. Yeah. And eventually the numbers caught up with him, because what happens? Ball bounces off a helmet. It's intercepted and set up a touchdown for Kansas City.
Yeah, short field. And I think that's the problem, is not that they didn't run LeGarrette Blount or weren't committed to the running game. It's just, you're not committed to the running game. It means your quarterback's going to be dropping back 50-some times to pass. And like Al said, sooner or later, either he's going to make a mistake or he's going to get the bejabbers knocked out of him.
Yeah.
And I think that people can live with the mistake for 1 week, and a team that – when the schedule comes out, we all play that game, WL, WL, sure. WL. We had an L when we saw Kansas City in week two. So, there are a lot of people disappointed that they lost the game. But, at the beginning of the year, you kind of thought you were going to lose this game. But, man, our quarterback's back there 50-some times. Sooner or later, he's going to get hit and hurt, and he's our franchise.
Yeah.
So that, I think, bothers people probably more than, all right, poor LeGarrette Blount didn't get to carry the ball. We'll get over it.
Yeah.
But the fact that they're not committed even remotely to a running game, and that they're just throwing Carson Wentz back there in danger, either by mistake or injury, too much.
Yeah.
There's real concern that he could turn into Andrew Luck. what's going on with Andrew Luck right now? He can't get on the field. He's so beaten up. Mm-hmm. Do you want to turn Carson Wentz into Andrew Luck, where you have a what we believe is a gifted young player, mm-hmm. and you're going to get him beat up because not because he's got a porous offensive line, but because the numbers are just there. That you keep throwing the ball, he's at some point he's going to start getting hit. The O-line's going to have a bad day, or somebody's going to get injured, or whatever. And so to kind of piggyback on what Rock was saying, that's more of a concern. Mm-hmm. Are we going to beat this guy up? And
One other thing about the running the ball, and then we're going to get to the offensive line, because there was some news on the last 24 hours, too, there. Zach Ertz called out Doug Peterson initially, said we have to be more balanced. We have to run the ball more and establish the run. Today on CSN, supposedly that statement was misconstructed, whatever that means. But I guess he's trying to get back in good graces here because he's a recipient of a lot of passes and a pass-happy offense, too. Do you think all the players are kind of smoothed over? Do you think they're going to try to establish the run a little bit more and keep everyone happy? If LeGarrette Blount doesn't get at least a dozen carries this week, I'm sure he's going to be not too happy about it. But do you think that the offensive players, do you think they're more committed to the run and they'll keep everyone happy through this week?
Well, if you hear every offensive lineman ever, they want to run block. They love run blocking because they get to beat guys up a little bit and it's a little bit more aggressive. So I think they want to do that if you're an offensive lineman. Zach Ertz really isn't noted for his blocking, but I think that maybe he realized, I don't want to bite the hand that feeds me. Let me back off on that statement and say it was misconstructed or construed or
that's
whatever.
That's a direct quote, misconstructed.
Whatever. He's a Stanford guy, so he comes up
with invent words.
Yeah.
I constructed my complaint poorly, and so I'm gonna push back on it, walk it back, I guess. But it's good. You're going to have your ups and downs. He is a second-year head coach. He's going to make mistakes. It's not like he was running away from it. He's like ultra-defending his game plan against Kansas City. The game was there to win. I think that's more frustrating to Eagles fans and maybe to some of the players. It was right there. And maybe there was too many times that if you know you're going to pass on every play, that Kansas City has a very good defense. I know they're missing one of their best players, but they still have a very good defense. And they were just they were just keying off. They were going after knew they were going to throw it every play. Maybe that's what Ertz was talking about. Let's stop being so predictable, even if we're trailing a little bit. They fell behind by two touchdowns and almost came back.
Yeah.
They scored, I guess Nelson Aguilar caught a pass with, seconds left to go in the game. And then they get the onside kick. And that wasn't a bad Hail Mary.
Yeah.
It was almost, they almost did it and tied
it
up
in the end zone.
So it's a little frustrating. So they had to throw the ball in the second half. So we'll see. I think you're going to see a much more balanced attack. You have a severely wounded opponent this Sunday. And you're definitely going to see a more balanced attack. You're going to see more of LeGarrette Blount. It remains to be seen. We'll see.
And I think we saw this when Andy was the coach. There would be a game like this. They'd throw the ball 97 times, and the running backs would be sitting on the bench with cobwebs over them, and then the next week he would run the ball, and then he would kind of have that little correction, and then he'd slowly creeping back to throwing the ball 50 times a game. So I'm sure Doug Peterson this week will, like Al said, they'll run the ball, put a lot of run plays in the game plan, and balance it out a little bit, and whatever happens, and then next week it'll probably be more passes and a few more passes until this happens again and the cycle repeats itself.
All right, now we get to the spin part of this week because the offensive line obviously had some holes. Isaac Sumalo had some issues. And Doug Peterson, at his postgame press conference, and on Monday, in the quotes I read and saw online, don't panic. Everything's fine. It's just one game. You can't evaluate. You can't judge on one game. You can't make decisions. Let's all relax and give them a few games. Frank Reich came out next day on Tuesday in his press conference, said the same thing. Wednesday, Chance Warmack lines up in his spot. So did Isaac do something wrong on Tuesday night or say something wrong in the film room? Or Al, you actually had an interesting theory about it because right now it looks like Chance Warmack is going to start at left guard this Sunday.
I think he is, but you're throwing disinformation out there to the Giants, who are already reeling right now. Yeah. I mean, they are a team that has self-esteem issues. I mean, there's no question about it. They're not playing well at all across the board, and they're doubting themselves. So what do? You make it even worse. Are we going to play Chance Wormack? Who are you going to game plan for? Mm-hmm. Is it going to be Isaac Seumalo? I think it's going to be Chance Wormack. He has a tremendous resume, a draft pick out of won a couple national championships at Alabama. Played at Tennessee for 4 years, came here with that resume. He came here to play, and this is maybe his opportunity. Jeff Stoutland was his coach at Alabama. He's his coach here with the Eagles. That's his guy. So maybe it's the coach, too.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't work out so great with Barrett Jones bringing him here, so maybe it'll work out with Chance Wormack to bring one of his boys here. Doug Peterson's job is to win.
Mm-hmm.
And that didn't look good at all. Seumalo was just lost last week. He didn't play well in the preseason. He didn't play well in both games so far this year. It's not like this is a knee-jerk reaction. This is you traded away your two veteran linemen, and Matt Tobin and Alan Barber, and then you put the kid in there, and he's just not stepping up.
Mm-hmm.
Now you have quality backups. You've got Stefan Wisniewski, who has played a lot of football. He's mm-hmm. been a starter. He's a good player. You have Chance Wormack in here now, a quality backup, who is a good player with a championship pedigree. So why am I going to take a chance on throwing away a game against a desperate team with a really good defensive line? I'm putting Chance Wormack in because you need that size. You know, we were talking at our an event we were at last night, even with Dave Spadaro, is that they're taking Chance Wormack over Stefan Wisniewski just because of his size, probably,
mm-hmm.
because the Giants present such a Damon Harrison is a beast. They need some bulk in there because you don't have it in the middle with Kelsey. So this is strategy here. This is chess match here.
Yep.
And Damon Harrison they have some really good players. JPP, miracle that he has come back from that hand, getting half his hand blown off. He's just been a wrecking crew. They can't take a chance on having this offense get blown up. So I think they're going to go with Chance Wormack.
I honestly don't think the Giants' game plan is hanging on who starts at left guard. So I don't know about the disinformation theory. But the thing about me with Isaac Seumalo, they traded Alan Barber and kind of anointed him the starter even before training camp.
Yeah.
And it was kind of odd. Like, you know, here's a young guy, a second-year guy. Shouldn't he have to earn that a little bit? And it was just odd that I felt it was odd at the time that they did it that way. And maybe it's come back to bite them a little bit. Maybe had they not done that, or, all right, we're trading Alan Barber, but the position is open.
Make the competition.
Yeah, make it a competition and make somebody earn it. He just kind of had it handed to him, and it's kind of blown up in their face a little bit right now.
All right, I want to ask you about the defense, too. We'll get to that in a little bit. We have some emails coming in here. Let's get to Bob from Allentown first. Do you really think the Eagles could make the playoffs this year? It's kind of early in the season, but Bob would like to know, do you think the Eagles can make the playoffs this
year? Yes, because they can win the division. I mean, this is not a juggernaut of a division, so they can easily win the division, and, of course, that would put them in the playoffs. So, yes.
All right. Carl from Bethlehem said, did you guys get a chance to talk to Andy Reid last Sunday? Do you think Eagles fans regret running him out of town? That's very interesting. Our Eagles fan over here is smirking at that question. So
it was time for Andy to leave. I mean, he did great work here, and it was just time for, you know, with nature to take its course and him to move on.
Did you get a chance to talk to Andy?
No, I did not. But to kind of piggyback on Rock again, is he is beloved. He'll always be beloved here. Mm-hmm. He was a good coach. We had a lot of fun. The Eagles were always in it. But like Rock said, it was time for him to go. And I think that I don't think anybody has any regrets on changing hands. I think there's the biggest regret is Chip Kelly, and just what a terrible mistake that was, and just what a jerk he turned out to be. And this is like inside the Eagles, you know, NovaCare. I mean, he was a jerk.
Yeah.
Nobody liked him. I couldn't wait to get him out of there. And so
once you're rude to Merrill Reese, I mean, you pretty much buying your ticket out of town too.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
all that stuff about the hallways and not looking at people. That was all true.
Yeah.
So he's out of football. He was one and done in San Francisco.
Yeah.
Now he's in the broadcast booth. Eating donuts.
Trying to put the boats back together. His famous line about not going back to college football. I burned the boat, so I'm not going back. Well,
yeah.
I'm sure eventually, you know, once he gets the the boat put back together, he'll be back in college football.
Al, before we came on the air, you were sharing kind of an interesting story, too, about fans in Kansas City and that there were a lot of Eagles fans there. It probably has to
Washington.
Be less, or for Washington. But I think in Kansas City, it has to be less pressure for Andy Reid. Don't you think it's a little bit, it's a step back in terms of the spotlight and the media scrutiny? And
well, when he, it was interesting. We have a new magazine in Baltimore. You're going
to
hear that a little bit later on. And I went down and I talked to some players who were here before, Jeremy Maclin and Brandon Boykin. And Brandon Boykin was like, we thought that was the way it was everywhere. And he goes that there was always like all these 80 reporters in there on a Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And you go to Baltimore and there's six guys there at home on a Wednesday. And he just like, it's just amazing how the interest in Philadelphia and all the media coverage you get is not the same anywhere else. And it's not the same in Kansas City. In Buffalo, when they came here, Derek Boyko, the media relations director for many years with the Eagles, went up there to become their head guy. They had five traveling reporters, and they had five staff members. They had a staff member for every reporter who came here for that preseason game. So it's not the same in every city. There is tremendous interest here. There's tremendous interest in the New York teams. And but I believe that he could have had his choices. He went to Kansas City because of the fans. He loved it here. He loved the whole fan, the adoration that fans had and the passion they had. If I was going to pick another franchise, it was just they're just bonkers over their team. You have to go to the Red Sea, Kansas City.
Yeah.
And he wanted that. He didn't want to give that part of it up. And I really believe that had a big factor in him picking going to Kansas City. And, you know, they're a team the NFL covers, the NFL Network. Brian Baldinger tells you that they only cover about 8 or 9 teams. Kansas City is one of them because of the incredible fan following they have. And if you ever have a bucket list and you're an NFL fan, you've got to put going to Arrowhead Stadium on that bucket list. It's an amazing experience to go there.
That's interesting. All right, we're going to get back to the Eagles chat in just a little bit. We're going to talk about defense. We're going to talk about D.C. football. And Rock does a great job covering some college football as well. We'll get to that all straight ahead. Right now, it is two things I want to do. All right, we'll do the other thing later. We'll go to the trivia right now. And tonight's trivia question, what TV personality intercepted Eagles quarterback Doug Peterson and returned it for a 44-yard touchdown to win the game for the Giants back in 1999? Final score, 23-17. And you got to get both parts of this correct. And where was this game played? We need either the city or the stadium name. So, again, who was the person to bring back a Doug Peterson, then quarterback of the Eagles, for a 44-yard touchdown back in 1999? And where was this game played? And here's more information on how and what you can win.
You could win a $10 gift certificate to use to see the latest movies and the hottest music, sports, and pay-per-view events on RCN On Demand. You can only win one gift certificate every 4 months. But if you haven't won a prize in the last 30 days, you may be able to win another great prize. Call or email us right now with your trivia response. Callers get priority. But if we don't get a caller with the correct answer during tonight's live sports talk show, we'll take all email responses and conduct a random drawing on our next live show to determine the winner. Watching the show on replay or VOD? Send us your guess now, and you just might win an RCN On Demand $10 certificate. Good luck with Sports Talk Trivia.
Welcome back to RCN Sports Talk, presented by The Morning Call. Our special guests, Al Thompson and Rock Hoffman, great writers for football stories, which you can check out. In fact, we're going to take a look at this your current edition of football stories in two different markets, both Philadelphia and in the D.C. market. So let's take a look at what we have for the Philadelphia market, Fletcher Cox. No surprise, is your featured cover, and then you can talk about what's in this edition of the Philadelphia football stories.
Well, it's obviously Brian Baldinger wrote a great column about Fletcher Cox, and he must have liked it because he actually said initiated hello today at his locker. And he's not Brandon Graham, you know, and nice guy, don't get me wrong, but he's not a very forward guy. And so there's tons of our top 20 for New Jersey, Delaware, and Southeastern Pennsylvania is in there. Rock does a great job. He had a good story in there about Temple. Gary Cobb, Dave Spadaro, Eagles Insider, all have columns in there. We did a story on the fans and how about the Washington game, just how they travel so well. And Jeffrey Lurie, in his impromptu press conference, actually said, and that's what the story was about, that he really said that he would rather, pretty much insinuated, he would rather host the draft again than host a Super Bowl.
Wow.
Because it showcased Philadelphia is so incredible. And it really was an amazing event.
The city did a great job.
And it was all Eagles fans, though. Yeah. You heard the Eagles chant all the time. They booed everybody there from the Cowboys who would come on stage. Yeah. And people would egg on, you know, getting themselves booed. It was really well done. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Not one single arrest, not even a citation.
Yeah.
They were so well behaved.
It has to come back to Philly soon, right? I mean, I don't know about next year, but certainly soon.
All the stuff is still here. The production stuff.
I mean, they're not going to move it to Topeka
And
then have to move it to Dallas or Pittsburgh or wherever.
Any word on when they'll decide? Will they wait till the season's over and then announce it?
It seemed like there was a lot of logistics, so I would think that they would have to announce it relatively soon. And the great thing about the draft is the weather's a little bit warmer, so it could be an outside event. I mean, the Super Bowl, you know, the first weekend in February, I like the winter. Most people don't.
Yeah.
So, you know, showcase, how well can you showcase Philadelphia in the first weekend in February? I don't know that you can do a great job of doing that. So, I don't know that we should have the Super Bowl in this area.
And there's another cover we have. Maybe you can talk a little bit about that magazine as well.
That's our debut issue in Baltimore. Again, Brian Baldinger is the face of the magazine right now. We have some may have some announcements soon who's going to be the official magazine of, but I can't say that yet. But obviously we're focusing on the Ravens. Rock has a great story now about a kid from Baltimore that is going to be going to probably going to Notre Dame.
Notre Dame and Stanford Thomas Booker at the Gilman School.
Mm-hmm. A lot of great football down in the DMV area.
I was surprised looking at it how many guys have come out of that area.
And Navy and Maryland, we'll be covering them, and they've done a great job of helping us out of playing very well at the beginning of the season. And so, very excited about being in another market, and we hope to be in New York and other places in the near future.
That's great. And in this area where everything is more digital, I mean, your magazine's taken off, and you want to touch on where people can pick it up?
Well, in Philadelphia, it's mostly in the Wawa Super. The Super Wawa food markets, about 150 of them throughout the tri-state area, southeastern Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Delaware. And in Baltimore, it's at quite a few Royal Farms, which I'm sure are throughout the D.C. area, Baltimore area.
Yep.
And there's quite a few down there, about 100 stops altogether. Most of them are Royal Farms. Same kind of thing, racks. They're free. And we live off the advertising.
All right, and before we get back to the NFL, Rock, as Al alluded to, do a great job with college football. I'll ask this question as gently as I can, focusing more on Villanova, because we are the home of the Lafayette Sports Network here. But you were at the Villanova game last week, and obviously the Wildcats looked very impressive, and they look to have a good 2017 season.
Oh, they sure do. I mean, they start the season as a top 10 team in FCS, and, you know, I didn't see that coming. They played Lafayette last year, and it was I think it was a relatively close game, 31-14 or something like that. So I didn't see this 59-0 whitewashing, happening. So I think it just kind of got away from Lafayette pretty quickly and then just snowballed. And, they really couldn't do much right early. And like I said, some turnovers led to it snowballing on them. But as far as Villanova, I mean, they got Zach Bednarczyk as their quarterback. So in college football, if you have a quarterback, you can win, so I think that's the case for Villanova. And there was a changing of the guard a little bit. Mark Ferrante taking over for Andy Talley, who was he's been there forever at Villanova. So this is the first year with Mark Ferrante as head coach.
All right, let's get back to the NFL talk. We have one more email here. I want to get to Ray Notown. So how good is the front seven for the Eagles, and do you think they can make up for their weak secondary? Which kind of leads into where I was going next. So, Al, first of all, let's talk about the positives on defense for the Eagles. How good is that front seven?
The front seven has depth on the defensive line. They have three really good linebackers with Michael Kendricks, with Nigel Bradham, and I'm losing my mind here.
Never had it.
But they have a great starting threesome on the but they don't have any depth at linebacker, per se. They go right to Najee Good, who's a good special teams player. He can make big plays at times. But Jordan Hicks is the other linebacker I was talking about. Jordan Hicks is a big play artist. So their front seven is outstanding, but they have a little weak on depth on the linebacking core. And, you know, it's funny. Their safeties are as good as anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Malcolm Jenkins, of course, leads the way. And their secondary came up big, even after they lost Ronald Darby. Jalen Mills has, I think, 12 tackles, an interception, and like three defended passes so far this year. He's played tremendous. And they thought, people thought, oh, he's not fast. He's not this and that. But really, has any, they ended the Kansas City streak with the kid Weeks that had gone five or six straight games with a touchdown pass of 60 yards or more. And these kids, Rasul Douglas goes in there, gets four tackles and a defended pass against these guys and played pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't beat them with the long ball at all in Kansas City. Jason Kelce had a big day, but Travis Kelce had a big day on a shovel pass that had nothing to do with the secondary.
Wow.
And maybe put that on the linebackers a little bit more. But the secondary played very well, and it's turning out that it's not really such a weakness right now. Mm-hmm. So to answer the emailer's question, right now after the two games, it's really not a weakness.
Well, okay. The problem is they are ravaged by injuries in the secondary right now, so that could turn into a bigger weakness than we thought it was.
Sure.
with the injuries bug that has bit them.
But Douglas came in and he has held the fort,
mm-hmm.
And he came in and started. So with Patrick Robinson back, and at some point they're going to have Darby back, this unit may be shaping up to become a strength.
And McLeod and Watkins, I believe, they're out for this Sunday. Is that the latest you've heard? I don't think they practiced this week.
I'm not 100% sure, but I believe so, yes.
Okay. So, Ray, thank you for that positive question about the defense. Trey Elston, I believe, was picked up from the Bills. You said he's not going to be able to play this Sunday, though, right?
He was at his locker, at a new locker. He doesn't have his name on it. It says Philadelphia Eagles.
It's not a good sign for he's playing. Yeah.
No, so he may get activated, but if he does, how much can he possibly play? I think Rasul Douglas is going to be, they're going to lean on him a little bit more, especially since he passed his first test last week in Kansas City.
Yeah. Well, they just might have to activate them just for
and
numbers wise.
Also, there's going to be players like Malcolm Jenkins who are going to double up on playing corner.
Oh, okay.
And Maragos may even play a little corner. So there was talk today that Maragos may not just be a special teams guy this week, but he's going to get back there and help out.
Because mm-hmm. there was an issue, I guess, they had to get enough to get up to 53 because before they signed Elston, they were looking at maybe being shorthanded. So even if he is, they'll get to 53, but they'll still be a little weak in terms of the depth in the secondary. Now, looking ahead to the Giants game, there's no possible way the Eagles lose this Sunday, right? I mean, you mentioned early on, the Giants are struggling, they're reeling, they look lost offensively. The head coach doesn't know if he's going to continue making calls. The Eagles are bouncing back after a nice effort that they could have won on Sunday. There's no possible way the Eagles lose, right?
It's the NFL. And they made a movie after it, any given Sunday. They have tremendously talented receivers that have, because of injury, and just Brandon Marshall, who knows what's going on upstairs with him. He drops a pass that would have, like he says himself, he is doing the right thing. He is doing mea culpa after mea culpa. He's made himself available to anybody who wants to ask him questions about it. He doesn't back mm-hmm. away from it. He's not brooding or anything. I messed up. I blew it last week. And so that's a good thing. But he's got to turn it around. He has to be come up big this week. Odell Beckham practiced today, limited. He's going to keep getting better.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Evan Ingram, tight end for them. He's not really a tight end. He's kind of like a Brandon Marshall. He's really a receiver, but he's listed as a tight end. This kid is really, really talented.
Mm-hmm.
There's arguments that they shouldn't have used that draft pick on him. They should have used it for an offensive lineman. There were some pretty good offensive linemen that are starting right now in the NFL that were available to them, and they passed on it for a tight end. They already had all these great receivers, so what was the point? But it is what it is. But they have talent on offense. Their biggest thing is what are they going to do about Ereck Flowers? Mm-hmm. Ereck Flowers has been a disappointment since the day he walked in the door with the Giants. He was a ninth overall pick in 2015. And last year he became so, in 2016 he became so frustrated with all the questions about how bad he was playing that he actually put his hands on a reporter, like it shook him like he was sick of the questions.
Yeah.
And you can't do that. We were talking to Gary Cobb, former NFL player. When you see a player doing that and you're even at your locker seeing that happen, guess what? That's part of the deal. There's reporters in the locker room asking you questions. And if you're not playing well, people are going to ask you what's going on. And that's part of the job. And if you lose it so bad that you actually walk over and shake the guy, I mean, what does that tell you what's going on with Eric Flowers? And this is last year. This year, he is a turnstile.
Yeah.
You saw the film. I'm sure everybody saw the highlights or lowlights of him last week against Detroit. I mean, they were just, it was like there was nobody there. And then Bobby Hart's hurt on the right side, his ankle. He didn't practice at all today. Mm. And two of their best defenders started, B.J. Goodson, didn't practice at all today, and Janoris Jenkins didn't practice at all today. He's their best cornerback, so they got problems all around. And
it's interesting too because people are saying, "Well, the Eagles they have some holes in the offensive line and the secondary is weak." The Giants have weaknesses at those spots and then some.
And they're saying all the right things, they're doing all the right things. Mike Solomon is saying, "We're not going to make excuses. We're going to keep fighting." Former Philadelphia area kid Justin Pugh is saying, "We're not going to stop. We're not going to give up." Weston Richburg is saying the same things, that they want to be leaders. They want to try to turn this thing around. I can't imagine how Bobby Hart is going to play. He was out after two plays last week against Detroit. He hasn't practiced at all this week. How can you play in a big game, division game like this? So does Fluker play their one acquisition in the offseason, play right tackle? Or do they go with Justin Pugh and go with the kid Brett Jones at right guard, who was picked up by them a couple of years ago from the Canadian Football League? This kid has, you know, he's played well for them last year. Personally, I would leave it with Brett Jones at right guard and put Justin Pugh at right tackle. But what do I know? Because it seemed to stabilize a little bit last week when they put him there because Pugh can play. Mm-hmm. But what are you going to do on your left side when they're going with him? Eric Flowers is going to play. And what do you do? And I talked to some of the Eagles about it this week, whether it was Malcolm Jenkins, whether it was Brandon Graham, and they all said the same thing. We can't just sit there and go, wow, we're going to abuse this guy. Mm-hmm. We're just going to go after him. They need to stick to their game plan, and if they stick to the game plan and execute their game plan, those things, the sacks or whatever, Flowers will be exposed again. But he was tremendously exposed. And the Giants, there's just no Jonathan Ogden sitting at home right now that they can call up and say, hey, can you come in here and help us out a little bit?
Yeah.
They just don't exist right now. So they're going to have to make do with what they have. And the Eagles are doing the right thing. They're saying that we're not going to look at that aspect of it, that they're really struggling. You score 13 points in two NFL games, your offense, and rush for as little as they did.
Yeah.
You're in trouble. So,
But – at the same time, they're a dangerous team. I mean, because they've been kicked.
That was the flip side.
You were talking,
of going 0-3.
You talked earlier about media scrutiny. I mean, they're getting the screws put to them up in New York.
Yeah.
And, you know, they kind of question your manhood and kind of stuff like that. So you're gonna respond, perhaps, or perhaps not. So, but, yeah, they are. I think that's, if they were coming in here 1-1 or something like that and having these problems, maybe it's a different story, but the fact that they're 0-2 have looked awful, sooner or later you're going to have some professional pride and play, try to play your best game. Now it's a division game. That adds some juice to it as well.
And one thing that I think Eli Manning has to do in this game is, you talk about questioning people's manhood or whatever. I don't see guys out there other than Eric Flowers not giving it all, that they're taking their lumps, they're getting up, they're being physical, they're trying. Eli Manning, it seemed like if a breeze went through the stadium, he fell down. He just looked like he was seeing ghosts. And Malcolm Jenkins, I asked him about that today. I said, he looks like a guy who sees ghosts. And he's falling down. He's not being being tough in the pocket.
Yeah.
He's not taking those hits.
I think I'm more convinced now than I was 10 minutes ago that the Eagles are going to win this game without question, right?
But he's got – if he goes out there and he falls down because somebody taps his ankle, guess what? The rest of the team's going to see that. And it could be a disaster on Sunday. It really could be. But it's, I think it really starts with Eli. He's got to come out there and be tough as nails. He's got to be able to take a hit. And because he's going to get hit.
Oh, yeah.
This group is going to – they're licking their chops. Are you kidding?
Yeah.
So, interesting, but I think it starts with Eli.
All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll have Fox Sports Radio's Kelsey Nicole Nelson talk some NFL, in particular the Washington Redskins and the NFC East in general with her. We will take our first timeout break, and the Liberty Boys soccer team jumped out to a great start this season under a new head coach. Sports Talk videographer Mike Kingsley brings you the Hurricane story.
Last year, I learned how to be a part of a big team as an underclassman, and that has helped me this year to learn how a lot of the underclassmen on the team this year feel, because a majority of our team this year is sophomores.
We have a really strong group of top players, and it's unfortunate that we have, you know, the surplus of players who may not necessarily get the respect. But for right now, our goalkeeper, Blake Koski, is playing quite well, both on the field and in goal. Our central defender, Spencer Koski, has done a really nice job manning down the fort back there. Safa Turkdamnez has done an extremely positive job of putting the ball in the back of the net and serving as a catalyst for our team. Salem Hatungimana has been a fiery wing player for us who's bagging his goals as well. Andrew Epsaro is playing extremely well in the center of midfield, distributing well, getting his assists as well as his goals.
I'm most happy with how our team works, like contributes the individual aspects of each of us into the team's play.
You know, no matter who you play with your rivals, it's just every game is high intensity, it's very fast paced, and you just kind of have to stick to your game plan, stick to your gut, and trust that everything's going to work out. But with Freedom, it's a little more than Becca. They have higher quality players, they have better coaching staff, and they are willing to compete and fight every ounce of the game, and it's just a good, in the end, it's a who wants it more.
Play rivals teams is definitely it's exciting. You know, every game just go out there and it's just really fun to play.
I think overall the team has responded extremely well to the new program as it is. We are an incredibly dedicated young bunch who not only love the game but love one another. It's a really family-oriented group, and I think through the later months of our season, whether it's late October or late November, whenever we're playing, that it's going to be a really tough ask to play against us because we're so hungry to support one another.
Welcome back to RCN Sports Talk, presented by The Morning Call. Keith Groller on an assignment tonight. You can read all about it in tomorrow's edition of The Morning Call. In studio, Al Thompson and Rock Hoffman from Football Stories, the magazine, and the radio show on 610 AM in the greater Delaware Valley area. And right now we're joined by a special guest on the phone line as well from Fox Sports 1340 and 96.9 in the D.C. area, in the DMV region, Kelsey Nicole Nelson. Kelsey, welcome to Sports Talk.
Hi, Chris. Thank you so much for having me.
It's our pleasure, and great work down in the DMV, and we appreciate you giving your time and talking a little bit about the Redskins with us. The first question I had, obviously Jordan Reed, a big part of your offense, one of the best tight ends in the game, had a broken toe, has a chest injury, he hasn't been practicing this week. What's the latest on him, and how much can they try to get him healthy for this weekend's game?
Sure. So you asked the question basically every Washington Redskins fan in this area is asking, well, this crucial part of the offense Jordan Reed play. So you were correct in saying that he was out of practice until yesterday, but the good news for Redskins fans is that he did practice today, though he was limited. Mm. And the good thing about it is obviously that, of course, they want to see him Sunday. So I think chances right now will be that he will be a go for Sunday. I think people need to remember that he is a tough guy. He had the shoulder separation injury last year, but he's all about playing through pain. But the big thing I think today is that he did not practice with the tight ends. He actually practiced with the wide receivers because the tight ends were doing combo blocking drills today. So, of course, they're still looking out for him. Mm-hmm. And he did miss, I want to say, 20 games in his first four NFL seasons. But the good thing is that if he was not a go for Sunday, the Redskins still have Vernon Davis, Niles Paul, and of course the rookie Jeremy Sprinkle. So I would say Redskins fans, don't fret too much.
Okay. Terrell Pryor, of course, I always think this is interesting with social media. The other day he was tweeting about, he was telling opposing teams' defenses, with defensive backs, where they should tackle him and where they should not tackle him. And the past day he came out and said he's going to have a spectacular season, thanks in part to the great game he is going to have this Sunday against the Raiders. How is that going over? And is that an issue in the clubhouse at all? Or is that just, you know, he's a wide receiver, so that's how wide receivers act nowadays?
I'm sure it's been an issue. I don't know why he did that. You talk about having a big game and he was bragging about it, but then you tweet something that didn't need to be tweeted, especially before you play a Raiders defense that's very good. Now, I think we all saw the game. Of course, we did think the hit was low, but it was legal. So, of course, I don't think he should have did it. It wasn't wise. It wasn't smart. And I'm pretty sure someone in the Redskins front office is talking to him about saying that on Twitter.
Yeah. Last week, in fact, the running backs so far have done a nice job. Rob Kelly, Chris Thompson and company. Kelly, though, I know suffered a rib injury the second half of their game last week against the Rams. What's the latest with him, and do you think they can continue this success running the ball by committee, especially if Kelly is out?
Sure, so that's great. Of course, the rest of his running game has been pretty strong. Kelly did say he was in a lot of pain after hurting his ribs. But the word so far is that he will wear a pad over his ribs to protect them if he does play Sunday night. So, of course, that is for extra protection. But if he can't play, they do have Kerr-Nine who will play. And, of course, then Chris Thompson will carry the bulk of the carries. And he will still serve his role as the third down guy for Washington. And then, of course, Thompson, on the other hand, he had a big game last week against the Rams. And, of course, people are expecting him to have another big game. But I think it's great, obviously, that the Redskins do have Thompson in that role, just in case Kelly will not play with the injury to his wrist.
Okay. Kelsey, this is Rock Hoffman from Football Stories. What about Samaje Perine, running back? Will he be in the mix there if Kelly can't go?
Correct, yes. So he will be the guy that will take over the bulk of the carries with Chris Thompson if Kelly cannot go.
Al?
And just talk a little bit about the secondary. When you have, I guess it's Mason Foster and Ryan Kerrigan are tied with the team with one interception each. That's not exactly dominating numbers, but it's only been two games. But they're against Derek Carr. Who has the third best quarterback rating in the NFL. He's got five touchdown passes. I mean, how do you think that matchup is going to work, Derek Carr against the secondary for the Redskins this week?
It's definitely going to be one to watch, but I think people need to remember the Redskins' defense has been pretty solid this season, and I think if they can keep playing at the level they're playing, I think Derek Carr is going to have his issues with the Redskins' defense. And I honestly think it's going to be a close game. I think it's going to come down to defensive takeaways, and I think that's going to be the key to winning the game on Sunday night.
Our special guest, Kelsey Nicole Nelson from Fox Sports Radio, host, anchor, and reporter, especially with the Washington Redskins. Sticking with defense, Preston Smith had a great rookie campaign 2 years ago, not so much last year. They brought in Ryan Anderson through the draft last year. It looked like that he was kind of being surpassed on the depth chart, but it looks like he's had a good first 2 weeks of the season. Has Jay Gruden talked about him at all, or is Preston Smith, is he doing anything differently, or anything that is, can he, it looks like he might be getting some more reps and some more playing time going forward if he can continue this. Has Jay Gruden talked about him at all recently?
Right. No, that's a great one. Of course, Preston Smith, you said it. He started off his rookie season great, but then he had the sophomore slump. But Gruden has been talking about him, but I will say the praise is not over the top. It's nothing to write home about. Mm-hmm. He basically is saying words like fine and good, describing his play. So, you know, nothing over the top, but he is encouraging. And I think he knows that he's going to see a lot more of Smith, but you can tell that Smith is still proving himself to his head coach.
All right. And then one other defensive question. Sua Cravens. Draft pick, a lot of people spoke very highly of him. This year, before training camp, he leaves the team, says he's going to retire. Teammates are shocked and disappointed in him. Then he decides to come back. The Redskins say, okay, we're going to, you know, we talked him back. He's going to play eventually this year. You know, he's going to be out, obviously, for a month or so. And then they put him on the left team list, which means he can't play at all here in 2017. What's going on with him, and does he have any future with the Redskins or any football or any desire to play football at all going forward?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, you're asking the million-dollar question. Everybody wanted to know what happened. So, of course, I think the second-year safety, everyone else, he's been pretty vocal, I think, about his decision about considering to retire from football, talking about he didn't really want to get any more further damage to his body, which is understandable, of course, with everything going on in the news with CTE, CTE and stuff like that. But I think what the Redskins' decision to do place him on IR was really because they want him to know what he really wants. And I think they didn't want to have somebody wishy-washy in the locker room, because it was reported that the players had kind of started to see that, and some of the decisions he was making, the team didn't feel like he had their best interest. So I think that's why they made the decision that he made, just because it seemed like Craven didn't really know what he wanted, even though he had said through his agent, of course, that he did still want to play.
All right, before we let you go, expectations for this weekend. They have the Raiders. Do you think they can win two in a row and get back among the top teams? Of course, Eagles fans hoping they're going to win as well this week. But what are your thoughts on the Redskins versus the Raiders this weekend?
You know, I think we're all in for one on primetime this Sunday night. I think it's going to be a really good game. But I honestly do think the Redskins can win this game. I think this is going to be Kirk Cousins' game to shine. I think he's going to kind of have his way with the Redskins' defense. Now, I think Kirk Cousins, of course, we want to see him throw that long ball. We really haven't seen him throw anything over 20 yards, but I think he will do it this game. Of course, Terrell Pryor is feeling confident. So I think if those two can connect, we will be in for a good one. And I'm going to give the Redskins a touchdown win over the Raiders this Sunday night.
Al, you have one more?
Kelsey, I had a quick question for you. I was at the opener where the Redskins lost to the Eagles 30-17, and there was a lot of Eagles fans there. There was there's always a lot of Eagles fans there when they play.
There is.
And I think when there's a team within driving distance, that team is well represented at Redskins games. Is that something that's always gone on with the other teams, like Giants or the Steelers or the Ravens or whatever, that they're able to get these tickets? And you could hear the Eagles chants at the end when Fletcher Cox scored that touchdown. You could really hear the Eagles fans. And the players were talking about it quite a bit in postgame about how the Eagles travel so well. Do other teams travel well to Washington?
Yes, and you said something that makes everyone mad here in Washington. Like, so the Eagles travel very well. Most teams that you can drive to the stadium, they also travel well. But, of course, also when the Redskins play the Cowboys, it's probably 50-50, I would say, in that stadium. I think the D.C. area is very interesting in the fact that there's so many different sports fans here. Of course, the Washington Redskins being the most prolific one, and, of course, when the Redskins play the Ravens, it's about 50-50. But that's something that's been happening more and more, and I think it's something that's really getting ticket holders mad, and, of course, like you said, the players mad, because I don't know what Redskins fans are doing, but they're selling their tickets to the other teams. And I know even the Vikings game I was at last year, there was like probably about 40% of Vikings fans in FedEx Field. And it was something that was crazy to me, because, of course, that's not driving distance. So it's something that keeps happening. But hopefully Redskins fans, if the Redskins can do well this year, hopefully we won't see it continue to happen.
Maybe there'll be Eagles fans down there to root for them, you know, to root for the Raiders.
Kelsey, thanks so much for your time, and we appreciate it. Keep up the great work with Fox Sports Radio.
No problem.
All right.
Thanks so much.
Kelsey Nicole Nelson, award-winning sports reporter at Fox Sports Radio. You can hear in the D.C. area, 1340 and 96.9. Time for a break. Last week we had some technical issues, but tonight we bring you the story of our preseason high school football number one team in the Sports Talk poll, the Parkland Trojans, off to a 4-0 start.
The thing I've learned most throughout the past season or two is trusting my teammates and them trusting me. It's all about loyalty on this team, and with the trust and the bond created between us, it just helps us on the field and off the field.
Well, definitely from last year, I learned that like we have to work hard at practice, because how you practice is how you play, no matter what. And also like just building that like that team chemistry, because that's the most important thing to us. Personally for us, I feel like the defensive back, like we were very like underrated, and like we are considered very inexperienced, so I feel that like we kind of proved ourselves.
I've been the most happy with our offensive line and our defensive backs. Like Cole said earlier, the defensive backs have gone unnoticed the past couple games. I think there's only been three or four catches let up on them in three whole games, so that's very, very impressive. And then being the running back, getting to see my linemen 5 and 10 yards downfield when I'm running the ball, they're the reason why I'm so successful. And areas of improvement, I feel like there's little holes everywhere around with our linebackers. We got some stuff to work on, and then defensive line, we got some stuff to work on. But overall, I think that team is pretty sharp, but I'd really like to award those defensive backs and the offensive linemen for the work that they've been doing this football season so far.
Best part of our team, the spot that has stepped up the most has been the O-line. they had some doubts coming into the season, but they've really shown that they're a force to be reckoned with.
Like, an extra year of having, like, chemistry build is huge, because for us, we've been together since middle school, and then, like, we've been talking about this year for years, so it's huge. Like, it's just building that chemistry. We all feel super comfortable, and, like, we trust each other.
Final moments of RCN Sports Talk presented by The Morning Call. I want to get Al Thompson and Rock Hoffman's thoughts one more time on the Eagles and Giants and your keys to victory on Sunday against the New York Giants.
For the Eagles, I think it's just going to be simple. Stick to your game plan. Don't turn the ball over. You keep it simple. That's what Jordan Hicks tells me every week. We just got to stick to our game plan, not worry about them, and they'll be fine.
Yeah, play your game. But they can't turn the ball over and give the Giants hope. I think they got to get a fast start and kind of beat any will out of the Giants that they may have and just crush them.
Yeah, I was going to say, is that a big key to trying to kind of jump out to the game early? Obviously, they want to try to run the ball too, but, I mean, it would be great if they could jump out to an early lead.
And like I said, break their will quickly.
Because I think it will be broken quickly, especially the way Eli's been this season.
Okay, and a game prediction? You're going to score prediction, final score?
You have to give, I would say, 31-10.
31-10, all right, Rock?
28-10, Eagles.
All right. There you heard it. Eagles big-time winners this weekend. Al and Rock, thanks so much for your time and continued success with Football Stories.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Quick shout-out, too. I want to give Art Corrigan a big congratulations. He won his 600th win for his boys' cross-country team. We did a story on him a few years ago on both the boys' and the girls' team. So, Art, congratulations. National head coaching win, 600th for Mr. Corrigan. That'll do it. Keith will be back next week when you join us for the next edition of RCN Sports Talk presented by The Morning Call. I'm Chris Michael. Good night, everyone.